Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? We'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Good afternoon. We welcome you inside Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. SI's Peter King will join us in the second hour of the program today. In the meantime, it is time for you. This is sort of a nitpick Tuesday on a Wednesday with a short work week this week. With the Monday night game, of course, it means Patriots Monday was on a Tuesday, which means Nitpick Tuesday is on a Wednesday, although I'm just not still quite certain what there is to nitpick after a 42-14 butt whooping of the Houston Texans on Monday night, Biggie. Have you given it any thought? Really?
I have, yeah, and I'm having a difficult time as well.
I don't have any major complaints. I don't have really any. You know how we love to nitpick.
Oh, yeah.
And we love to just kind of get under the fingernails, you know, of games and discuss and dissect and overanalyze and, you know, things that bug us and, you know, and just tick us off, really.
Our job.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what we do here. And I, honest to goodness, I have spent the last 24, 48 hours going up and down a list of things, and I'm having a really hard time because most everything I'm kind of going with always ends up with the same answer. It's 42-14.
Yeah.
42-14. Yeah, but 42-14. I mean, what else do you say? Honestly, the one nitpick that I come back with here was that it might have been too damn perfect. It didn't give us anything to nitpick.
That you couldn't get an accurate read on the Texans?
Or? Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, I'm really kind of ticked off at the Texans.
Right.
Because the fact remains is that I don't think they played up to their capabilities on Monday night. I think they totally and completely crapped the bed. I don't think they came to play at all. Letter jackets or no letter jackets coming off of the bus on Monday.
Yeah.
I think they were blinded by the light or something, but they just, yes, that's exactly right. They blew it. They blew the showcase showdown. That's what they blew. They did not come to play. Now, I don't know whether or not this is going to change for the playoffs. I still think Houston, personnel-wise, has got one of the better teams in the entire NFL this year. I will tell you this, though, that I think now what we saw and what I was able to notice is that they are not a deep team at all. They're woefully thin, and if they get one or two injuries in the wrong places, they're going to go right from contender to pretender in a hurry. And we saw how fragile they were a year ago when they lost Schaub, and even though they got into the playoffs, they didn't have any real success there. Oh, they won a playoff game. They did win a playoff game last year.
They also should have beaten Baltimore in the playoffs.
Yes, they should have, and they didn't. So, but if they
even with all of their injuries,
if they lose Matt Schaub and go with T.J. Yates again at this stage of the game, how confident are you that they can be an AFC champion? Not. Andre Johnson? I don't think so. J.J. Watt? Even though the Patriots did a magnificent job of neutralizing him on Monday night, how confident are you? Because we saw that their back seven has got some holes.
I think they laid an egg for sure Monday night, but I also think they're a better team than they displayed.
That's my whole point here. They are better than what they showed, but I'm running Swiss cheese holes through, you know, what we thought was maybe top to bottom the best team in the NFL, and they did not prove that, even come close to showing that on Monday night. Now, in the same regard, the Patriots took care of business, did exactly what they had to do. And what am I missing over here?
Brandon Marshall has a Charlie Brown Christmas tree on the podium with his press conference.
Well, that's nice of Brandon to have that.
See, there you go. Turn around, John. There it is.
Oh, that's kind of cool, actually.
It is, actually.
I like that. Very little, you know, teeny little Christmas tree, and he's got
the one red bulb.
One red ornament.
Yep.
Okay. I kind of like that, actually. So Well, since we just digressed, I just lost my train of thought now. Nice.
The Texans weren't, you thought they were going to be the best team
yes,
to show
yes.
up.
Yes, and they obviously, they did not. And so in that regard, that was my major nitpick that I come out of there from Monday night was the fact that I just don't think we got a clear picture of what the Texans or who the Texans really are. And I realize this is supposed to be about Patriots nitpicks, but I think the Pats are clicking on all cylinders. I think the Patriots are used to playing this kind of football at this time of year, and I got to admit, I'm already, even though last week I said that 7-1 would be for this team, and I thought that the Houston game would be the more likely of the two in this stretch that they would win. And now with San Francisco coming up this week, my initial inclination was, okay, well, this is going to be a loss because that would be my original prediction back at the halfway point of the season. After what I saw Monday night, I'm not thinking that way anymore.
Well, but, John, and you may be right. I just want to play devil's advocate here.
Go ahead.
Everything bounced New England's way Monday night.
It did.
Everything.
It did.
It's rare that you go into a game and everything goes your way.
It did.
So, reality could set in a little bit this week when they face probably an even better defense than Houston's.
Is it really a better defense?
It might be. Might be.
I would give you the secondary, maybe. I'm not sure. I'm not so sure about the front seven.
Well, Justin and Alden Smith are pretty good now.
Yeah. But so was J.J. Watt.
Yeah, he was. I'm just saying everything went as planned. Everything went as perfectly as it could for New England on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen every game.
I'm also of the opinion, though,
especially against a good team like the Niners.
I don't disagree, but I'm also of the opinion that good teams also know how to create and make their own opportunities, to an extent.
To an extent, yeah. But I mean, everything went their way.
Okay.
I was talking to the guys on the other show right before this. The fumble that Hernandez recovered down inside the 10.
Yes.
If that goes the other way,
that bounced. I totally agree.
The game takes a different turn.
I really believe that if Devin McCourty doesn't come up with that pick and that becomes a 7-7 game,
that's a different.
That
game,
to me sure. was the incomplete and total.
But he made
the play. But that play turned the entire tenor of the game around.
It sure did.
You want one play that turned the entire game the way of the Patriots? It was McCourty's pick.
Right.
Without a doubt.
But that was a player making a play.
Yes.
The ball bouncing where it did, Hernandez being in the right place to get it.
Sometimes you're going to get those.
And it happened later with Brandon Lloyd's other touchdown.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Those kind of things, you almost have to throw your hands up if you're the Texans and say, you know what, it's not meant to be tonight.
Now, here's the other issue that I'm left with from Monday night. What was your thought on basically early in the fourth quarter, the Texans basically just cashing in and saying, all right, let's play another day?
I think it was smart of them. It was smart of them to do that because, like I said, they could see the handwriting on the wall. Nothing was going to go their way. Even a lot of the calls that the refs made, a little questionable against the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't their night. At that point, try to give whatever backups you need some valuable experience playing in a big game, playing against a team like New England. Why not?
Because it just wasn't going to go there.
Yeah, it just wasn't going to happen. You were down, what, 4 or 5 touchdowns at that point?
I was a little surprised. When it got to be 35-7, I thought that it might happen, and I was still a little bit surprised.
Nah.
Still a little bit surprised.
You're not going to come back at
See,
at
because
bad
I don't
stage.
See I don't see the Patriots, if the Patriots are on the flip side, I don't see the Patriots doing that.
Oh, but that's stupid.
Well, but I think that's also the mental makeup of the New England Patriots. And I think that's what has helped put the Patriots in the position where they are now in being a dominant team over the course of the last 12, 13 years. I think that's that mentality that they don't quit, that they don't give up, that even if they're down, they're going to keep scratching, clawing, fighting. I didn't see that from Houston. I think that's what separates New England from Houston right now and probably what separates New England from almost any other team in the league right now. One man's opinion. All right, so here's what we got on 12-12-12. By the way, don't you just love that? You realize that we won't have this day again for another 100 years.
Yeah?
It's a day that you and I will not be here for.
No. No, we won't.
Not somehow unless we discover the Fountain of Youth. Quite frankly, I don't know that I want to live to be 153.
No. I mean, if I could stay young and vibrant, then fine.
If I could
still
like
have
I
my
am,
mind.
If I could stay like I am right now,
yeah.
I'd be okay with it.
I'd be okay with it.
I'd be all right with it.
Right. And just for those of you who've tweeted some of this stuff this morning, the Mayans weren't wrong about today. It's next Friday.
Right. It's next Friday.
It's 12-21-12 that they predicted.
Yeah, 1-2-2-1-1-2. That's what they're
I had some people say that.
The calendar, the Mayan calendar ends on 12-21-12.
Yes. Some people thought it was today.
Everybody seems to think that means that, you know. So I got a couple of questions there. First of all, because today is 12-12-12, mm-hmm. all right, and I kind of thought a little bit of this last year when we were doing 11-11-11, but 12-12-12, I think it's kind of silly to ask, okay, who's your favorite number 12 of all time? Well, duh, who do you think Patriots fans are going to vote for in that particular
Bob Greasy.
Bob Greasy, no.
Terry Bradshaw?
But I would tell you, here's two things I want you to consider, and let's see how long it takes somebody to come up with this, right? Who wore number 12 before TB? Don't come up with that.
Okay.
Not yet.
I was just going to say, good question.
Who wore 12 before Tom Brady?
The previous...
Yes.
The immediate
predecessor to wearing number 12 in a New England Patriots uniform. That's what I'm looking for, all right? I want to see how long it takes somebody to come up with that, number one. And number two, who is your favorite football player and any athlete who wore number 12? Who's your favorite? And you can give me your favorite 12s, but I'm looking at favorite 12s today in honor of the day that only comes around once a century. You know, kind of a neat day, and yeah. I'm sure that there's probably lines around the corner in Vegas for people to get married today. Probably, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't you think so?
I would imagine that, and they...
Just so you could put down on your, hey, I was married on 12-12-12.
Right, and at the time, too.
Oh, yeah.
12-12 past 12. 12-12,
yeah, 12-12-12. Oh, my goodness, that would be remarkable.
To say you do at that exact second.
Well, we just passed it in Vegas time. Because it's 2:21 Eastern.
It's 2 hour difference over there?
I think it's 2 hours behind us. Yes, Mountain Time. They're Mountain Time Zone.
Still Mountain, yeah.
So it's actually 12:22, 12:12:12 right now. So we just passed that 10 minutes ago.
Mm.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. So there's a couple of questions for you to consider on the table today. Number one, who wore 12 previous to Tom Brady? Who was his immediate 12 predecessor in a Patriots uniform? And who's your favorite 12 of all time? In pro sports, college sports, doesn't matter. Football and any other sport, it's all on the table. So those are the issues that we have at hand here. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us via email. Webradio@patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Again, it's 508-298-0398. It's John.Rook on Facebook. It's at JR Broadcaster. On Twitter. Okay, some of the things to consider. Peter King will come up in the next hour of the program. Let's talk to Steve in Killeen, Texas, who's been kind enough to hang on. Steve, you're in the playbook. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, John.
How's it going?
And Big E. Oh, it's going great, man. As we spoke prior to the game, you know, the 49-3 blowout, you know, step one done.
Yep.
Or as the PFW guys were saying, check.
Exactly.
And I don't know if you caught the end of their show, but I emailed in earlier, and I'm looking at trying to get some Rudy's brisket up to you.
Nice!
The post San Fran win is the hope. Brisket's coming for the holidays.
Woo!
Does brisket travel well?
Well, you know, you probably have to dry freeze it a little bit, but other than that, you know, or pack it in that dry ice or
dry
something.
Ice.
Yeah.
But actually, Rudy's does a two-day ship, John. So
really, okay.
Yeah,
I
checked into it because I want to try and get it to you fresh and as you know.
You are the man.
Close to the real deal as possible.
Tremendous.
And the PFW guys seem a little happy, but no soup for you, Eric. Sorry, brother. You were definitely wrong as I predicted.
You know, Paul Perillo picked the Texans too. Just so you know.
Yeah, but what?
You Paul Perillo picked the Texans.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but what?
There were two of them. There were two that picked the Texans.
In my defense, the other thing I said is if Paul and Eric agree on anything, it can't be right.
Right. So how does he get food and I don't? He weighs 700 pounds. He can skip a meal.
Oh!
No. You were the golden calf for everyone, Eric. You know, it came down to you, so no one got anything.
Steve, is it okay if I share a little bit with Eric?
Well, I'm going to I'll probably ship a couple. So,
okay.
You know, there'll be enough for everybody.
Nice.
Yeah, as I said, in the spirit of the holidays, Eric, yeah, I'm going
to... See, I'm trying to take care of everyone.
Appreciate
you. I like the Texans. I'm going to man up and do what I need to do.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Nice. Nice. So is there a nitpick to be had from Monday's game? Steve, I'm really, honestly, I am at a complete and total loss here.
This is minutiae, given again, you know, the 42-14 thumping.
Mm-hmm.
The consecutive 4-3 and outs, if you look at the catches that were missed in those, John, you know, I kind of, on a couple of them, there were passes that were, you know, right between the numbers that should have been had to keep the ball moving forward. That would be, you know, the smallest possible nit I could find. But, you know, following that, it was all pat every day. But for me, I don't think it was the McCourty interception that really determined the pace of the game. I think it was the initial drive and the smash mouth football running the ball right at them with Ridley. Just established the pace the game was going to be played at. And the Texans seemed like they were flat-footed, taking it in the chin from that moment on.
Hmm. Well, a couple of things. The drops, yeah, I think you're right. Particularly Welker didn't have his best game on Monday night.
No, he didn't. And that actually, that's a really good one because I've had the 42-14 thing just sort of gloss me over here.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, this has sort of been a problem, I think, that has been a continual one this season, is that we're finding that Wes Welker has all of a sudden developed a penchant for some drops, one or two during a game.
Even though he's still, you know, five catches away from 100.
I agree.
He's having
Look,
a great season.
The overall scheme of things, it's really tough. It's really tough, but if that's what we do here. We nitpick, and that's actually a pretty good one.
And I'll piggyback on that to say that a lot of Tom Brady's throws were uncharacteristic Tom Brady throws, too. He, after that 21-0 lead, he was a little erratic. He wasn't, because that's one of the things I do during the game is chart his incompletions
okay. And
why they're incomplete, you know, whether they're overthrow, underthrow, batted passes, whatever. You know, I have a whole chart of the different ways that a pass can be incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
And by far his worst, his incompletions were more overthrows than anything else. He wasn't completely sharp after they got the big lead.
And not to insult the wounds, but if we go back and we look at the two losses in the Super Bowl to the Giants, that same sort of issue plagued us because it came down to literally one possession for one big play to lose those two games.
Mm-hmm.
And they came on the heels of missed passes. So,
yep.
You know, that's the nit and kind of pulling it all apart. But looking ahead to San Fran, you know, I think this is, again, another game like I thought the Texans game would be. It's going to be tough. It's going to be determined by, again, tempo, which Gruden pointed out the Patriots just established. And if that happens in that game, I think the end result will be the same. The score may be different, but I think the Pats walk away with another solid W. And then, you know, the coordination continues of, well, the Pats are the best team in the NFL. So, we'll
okay.
See.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, actually, that's a pretty good job of searching and finding nitpicks and coming up with at least, you know, a little something-something here, because I have to admit, I had such an overwhelming impression of dominance after Monday night's game was over that it scared me. And I'm thinking, wow, did they just do this a little bit too early? We got three games left to play.
And the first three drives, John, you know, I was with them going, wow, the Texans are a pro team. What is going on?
I got to admit, I was like stunned, floored. And, you know, I'm sitting there next to the clock operators and the statisticians and the spotters, and we're all looking at each other like going, what the hell is this? Where's the Houston team we thought we were going to get?
I also think, Steve, that they came out firing more so than they did trying to establish the run against Houston, which took me a little bit by surprise that they were that ready to challenge the pass rush of the Texans. They won the battle, but I was a little surprised. Yeah. I didn't see the running game as being that important until the second half.
And that's true. I mean, Tom, for those first three possessions, was just dead on.
Yeah.
I mean, the passes were crisp. They were where they needed to be. And, you know, they just did what they handled their business with, you know, the uncanny, usual Patriots precision that we've gotten a little numb to because we see it week in, week out. But, I mean, it was classic Brady and the guys firing on all cylinders and, you know, having the football god kind of bless us with some calls that went our way and bounces as well. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen this Sunday. And hopefully we'll win out. And if Houston drops one, then we're looking at playing at home.
That's true. That's true. That's what you're looking at. And I think it's very possible that Indy pops them once out of the two that's there. I think it certainly could happen.
Yeah, I mean, given who they have to play and the way the caliber of, you know, of Luck being, you know, the second coming of Manning as he has been, that's going to definitely be a couple of games to watch. And you know, I think this coming game with Houston and Indy will determine their character, John.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens in the loss. So if they bounce back,
well,
and they play the game the way we expect them to play,
no question,
that's going to be a good one, too.
No question. I do expect Houston to bounce back this week, however, since it's a game at home for them. So I expect that. But you're right. This will be a huge, huge character game for the Houston Texans.
And I think just to talk about Indy for 1 second, I think Luck is having a way, way better start to his career than Manning did.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Which is hard to fathom what that means for his future.
We got a little taste of that, and clearly the game got out of hand from the Colts early, and you know the Patriots were able to force turnovers, and that certainly is the way that you make things snowball on you. But I think we certainly have seen, you know, through the course of the year that this guy's going to be something to be reckoned with.
Yeah, and especially when you look at how bad the Colts were last year without Manning.
Right.
So, and thinking back to Manning's rookie year, they were, what, 3-13, I think, with Manning as a rookie, which, I mean, wow. Can't say enough about Luck.
All right, Steve.
All right, appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, buddy.
And, biscuits are coming, brother.
Awesome.
All right.
That's just fantastic. I love to hear that.
A little home cooking for you.
Thank you, Steve.
Bringing all your Twitter followers to this show.
Am
Junior
I?
Junior broadcaster's lines are full over here.
Yeah, I know. It's good, though, huh? Junior broadcaster. It's at JR Broadcaster. See? Yeah. He's got to have some way to get back at me just because I'm being blinded by the light that's being glared through the window here.
I'll give Kevin credit, though, for predicting the blowout.
Thank you for standing up for me, by the way, on the PFW
Predicted the
show.
Blowout.
Did you? You predicted the blowout? You didn't say that on this show.
Yes, he did.
This is
where he said it when we were making our predictions last week. He said, I'm going to come on just sit right out and say it. And, oh, no. You know what? Was it?
Oh, my God. That's right.
Yeah, because normally I don't really say anything when you guys
That's
do it.
Right. You did say that. You said this is going to be.
You said this is going to be a Jets-like blowout from 2 years ago on Monday Night Football.
Holy crap.
That's exactly what happened.
Kev, give yourself a round of applause. I mean, that's very deserved. That totally went whoosh, right over the head here.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kevin can be there, obviously, to offer insight.
I was thinking of that the whole game.
That Kevin Collins had predicted it.
Yeah, he
nailed it. He nailed it.
Yeah.
Good job out of you, Kev. Wow. Josh in Charlottesville.
Even a broke clock, right?
Right.
No kidding. Hey, Josh, you're in the playbook.
Even a clock that's stuck on 12-12 is going to be right every 100 years, right?
No kidding.
Right on. What's going on, John?
Hey, Josh.
Not much, man. All right, anyway, I have to say, first of all, I don't really have a nitpick with the Patriots so much as I do with the league, but, you know, I'll get into that. But I have to say, anybody who has a problem with the way they play that, they just simply cannot be pleased. It can't happen.
Well, but, you know, that's kind of what we do here. We do sort of, expand on the little, you know, nitpicky things that, you know, are kind of like, what, are you nuts? We do that every week here. And frankly, I just from talking to Steve, the Wes Welker issue is a great one to pick on.
That is a great one. Yes, it is. My biggest issue, I have to say, was just that the offensive line is kind of making me a little nervous. I mean, I know Vollmer, and, I mean, he prepared for J.J. Watt for some time, but, I mean, the Texans then again said Tom Brady didn't see nothing like J.J. Watt. What did Tom Brady get sacked? Once that game, he did get banged up a little bit. But, you know, that just creates some concerns for me, I think, going into the 49ers game, because they are one of the more hard-hitting defenses in the entire NFL. And, I mean, coming at them, I mean, this late in the season, I'm just a little worried about maybe a little couple dings here and there on the offense stretching into the postseason, you know. Of course, that affecting the Super Bowl run chances.
Well, you have to be happy at least, though, that they had their starting five in the game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
Which they haven't been able to do consistently this year.
Yeah, speaking of which, has there even been any word on Gronkowski?
Kind of. Yeah. I don't want to get into too much detail because I'm not sure I trust some of the reports that I've heard. So I don't want to validate them at all by talking about them, but there are some who seem to think that he's trying to come back for this game.
We should mention that for those who were outside of our immediate Boston area, that there was a report out at the Globe this morning that said that Rob Gronkowski wanted to try to practice this week. And clearly, today's practice session has not yet occurred. It got moved back, or at least the player access portion of it has not yet occurred,
right,
which Eric has got to get to in the next hour. And so we probably won't have a definitive answer until later today, and maybe and report back tomorrow, even if he's going to appear.
And even at that, John, it's a walkthrough,
right,
today.
So you might not be able to tell anything.
We might not be able to tell anything at all from today, unfortunately.
I haven't doubted he'd be back 100. I'm just saying that light at the end of the tunnel is good. It would be fantastic if he was fresh for the playoffs. I mean, yeah, that absolutely killed us in the Super Bowl last year. I mean, he could get out there on the field with a decoy, but he couldn't really even get out there, you know, as really a viable option, just because he couldn't really cut. All he could do is just, you know, kind of run in a straight line and then attempt to jump. But
see, I think they're taking way too big a risk if they try to play him on Monday, just because more so from a blocking standpoint than a receiving standpoint, because at least as a receiver, all you really need is your two hands.
Well, maybe they try to put him
as a blocker.
Maybe they try to put him in some of the passing situations as opposed to the running situation.
But here's the thing, John. They've not suffered offensively without him.
No, zero.
And plus, don't risk it.
We should also mention
leave enough alone.
But we should also mention, and the part of the roster changes that were done yesterday, which you can probably expand upon, if Vizantichenko was released by the team.
He was, but I don't know if that has anything at all to do with the tight end position.
Okay.
I think it might have to do with needing depth at other positions, like A, wide receiver, or B, line.
That's a wash. You lose Dante Stallworth, which, by the way, I didn't realize that his ankle was hurt that badly on that touchdown play.
I'm not sure it was.
Okay, there you go. So say what you want to about that, but, you know, all of a sudden now Stallworth is done for the year, which comes as a bit of a surprise, perhaps even more than a bit of a surprise. And number two, Deion Branch is apparently headed back.
It's official.
It is official.
Yeah, it's official. Right. He's back, and they signed a Maryland wide receiver slash kick returner to the practice squad. Okay. His name is escaping me at the moment. Tony Morgan, I think, or something like that. But so they've made some moves there. They still have an open roster spot on the 53. And something to consider, Nick McDonald, who's one of their versatile backups, wasn't available Monday night because of his shoulder injury. I don't know if that's so serious that maybe they need help on the offensive line. Mm. Maybe they're saving a roster spot for that. But I don't know if the Shanko release – I don't necessarily buy the argument that Shanko was released because Gronk is healthy. They had five tight ends, you know, all season, basically. Mm. So it's not – I don't really see that as a direct correlation. The only thing I will say about today's practice being any indication is that last week they had a walkthrough on Wednesday as well, and Gronk wasn't there. So if he is there today at the walkthrough, that might be an indication that he's going to practice the rest of the week. Now, again, I hope they don't do that. I hope they just leave him alone and let him just show up in the playoffs.
100%. I think most of us just want him to be 100%. Don't risk anything else, because we saw, you know, how much his absence or his being, shall we say, less than 100% can actually affect this team last year.
Well, we saw that, but we also saw the effects of rushing a player back from injury too soon. Hello, Aaron Hernandez.
Yes, earlier this year. Correct.
So I don't want to make that same mistake again with a guy who's even more valuable to your offense.
Anything else, Josh?
Yeah, pretty much, man. Just one other thing to bring up. Do you think that the ruling on the Saints bounty scandal, do you think that will have any effect on the ruling of the kickoffs? Do you think that maybe the owners and Goodell would look at that a little less favorably now than they would have prior to that?
You mean as toward eliminating kickoffs?
Yes.
What does the one have to do with the other? I'm kind of missing the connection.
All right, well, just the philosophy on the whole injury thing. I mean, first of all, it was just kind of the way they came out of the gate and looked at it. First of all, they eliminated the suspensions from the players. They said they were way too harsh. And that, you know, perhaps it kind of gave me the feeling a little bit like maybe this thing is getting way overblown due to this whole lawsuit thing.
Well, I don't think it was overblown. First of all, this was not the ruling by Paul Tagliabue was not a vindication for the players or for the New Orleans Saints, in my opinion. Those guys still did something they should not have done.
And Tagliabue said as much.
And Tagliabue did say that, but that seems to be going over everybody's head, including, by the way, Drew Brees, who's been tweeting out his rear end.
Yeah, he needs to shut up.
He needs to shut his mouth.
He needs to be quiet.
Because his play, you know, he wants the season back or what have you. No,
you
don't
get
the season back. Your guy's still screwed up, and the Saints still messed up, and the Saints deserved everything that they had coming to them. So I don't know. I mean, this is not a vindication.
No.
This is not a vindication at all. So I'm not sure that one thing has anything to do with the other. I'd be stunned if we eliminated kickoffs.
I would, too. I mean, I have all the respect in the world for Shiano, but sometimes I wish he would just kind of shut up down there a little bit, you know? But, I mean, eliminating kickoffs is one thing, but you can't turn this into a powder puff league. I mean, just for the sake
well,
of...
Well, I think that's...
These guys get paid so, so much.
I know.
I mean, they love to play the game, but the problem is, if you don't understand that...
I agree.
...something repeatedly is
right.
Going to have adverse effects, maybe you should
right.
sue the league. You should sue the college where you got your so-called education.
Very true.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to wrap it up for me, guys. Take it easy.
All right, Josh.
All right, Josh.
That's good stuff. All right, let's get to Tiffany in Wisconsin. Tiffany, you're in the playbook. Tiff.
Hi, John and Eric.
How are you doing, Tiff?
How are you?
Good. I'm sorry I missed a PFW, Eric.
Oh, that's okay. You can download the podcast anytime you want.
Uh-huh. Or you can just join us in the playbook anytime you want.
Yes,
you can do both. You can do it all.
Playbook.
Right, right.
Well, I don't have any. Well, I have a nitpick. Those 4 3-and-outs,
mm-hmm.
I mean, oh, that was annoying. It was just annoying. But I also loved the way I thought our defense looked really good, especially in the secondary. I was really, really impressed with the secondary and also with the aggressiveness and the physical nature of our defensive line. I just thought it was something I hadn't seen for a while.
Well, 2 points. Number one, as far as the 3-and-outs are concerned, I think sometimes you have to give credit to the other guys.
I agreed.
Okay,
agreed.
So
that's a pretty good defense.
It still is. In spite of getting torched for 42 and over 400 yards
and a
of
proud
offense.
Defense. Yeah. Let's not forget that.
Yeah,
either.
Yeah. There's no question. Number one, and then the second issue was what was it again? Sorry, I'm sorry, Tiffany. I'm a little distracted.
It was the secondary. Play.
Secondary.
I thought it had
okay.
vastly improved.
Right, and I think it coincides, and quite frankly, and I know Eric will expand on this, coincides really with Aqib Talib's coming in. I think we saw at least their willingness to be a little bit more physical before he arrived. But once he did arrive, I think we saw these guys not only hitting, but I just think everybody brought their game up a level. And sometimes when you bring in somebody who you know is better
right.
than you, you're going to rise to the occasion. And yeah,
right.
it has
psychological.
To, it's a psychological move up for everybody who's playing back there. It's kind of like, oh, wow, they brought in somebody. Well, I guess I better step up my game. And I really think that's what it is. I mean, we've noticed that. Opponent QBR is down since Aqib Talib arrived. We've noticed that completions are down, percentages down, yards down. Everything is trending the way that it should for the Patriots since he arrived with a permanent spot in that defensive backfield. And that is, I think there's a direct correlation.
Right. Eric, would you say that was a great play on the ball by McCourty more so than it was. I know it was a stupid move by Shaw, but I thought it was a great play on the ball by McCourty.
I wouldn't say it was a stupid move by Shaw. I mean, he might have been a little
careless.
He might have taken a little too much of a risk, especially when he had. I think if I saw the replay properly, I think he had Foster or one of his backs who was the hot receiver coming out
right.
wide open over the middle with nothing but real estate in front of him. As a check down option, I think he might have gotten a little greedy, and you know that's part of the nerves, or maybe not the nerves, but just the not having the experience of having been in that situation as many times as a Brady has or whatever, and trying to bite off a little more than he can chew. So I don't necessarily fault him for trying to make a play,
right, right.
But it was a little bit of a risky throw, and it was also a great read by McCourty, and he made a good
right.
play on the ball. So
right.
I'd say more. More of a good play by McCourty than a stupid play by Shaw.
Okay. And finally, I just want to say one thing I noticed when those guys, when it got on the field, the Texans seemed to me scared. They seemed like, oh, my God, we're here. This is the Patriots. I don't know if anybody else picked up on that, but they seem to give the Patriots a lot. I enjoy it. I like that. But I think from the get-go, it looked like the Patriots are up here, they're down there. They did not match. It just seemed like they shouldn't have been on the same field at the beginning. I don't know if anybody else saw that. Maybe I'm reading too much into that. I just thought it just, from the beginning, it was lopsided.
I didn't, well, and again, we watched the game from way up in the 300 level, basically, from where the press box is. So okay. I couldn't really get that vibe from the faces. You saw that on television?
Yeah, I saw that it was, maybe it was just they were respecting them a lot, and it just came across as a little scared. A little nervous.
Well, I don't know that they were scared or nervous. I think that, you know, they did put some emphasis on, you know, hey, this is a big game for us. Andre Johnson came out and said, hey, this is maybe the biggest game arguably in the entire history of the franchise. And when you say that, you draw unneeded attention sometimes to where it just doesn't need to go.
Agreed, but usually when people say that, though, Johnny, they match it. They show it. If you look at that, if you guys could like have it on a replay or something, just look at how the faces on the Texans look. They seemed to shrink a little bit.
Well, I don't think it was so much what they said, but I really believe it was the game plan that New England had for Houston. I give all the credit to the coaching staff from this last week for knowing exactly how they wanted to attack the Texans. And let's keep in mind now, Coach Belichick said last week, Houston doesn't do anything that we're not going to expect.
Yeah, they are a do what they do team.
And it's kind of like, all right, if you can stop us. And that's they won 11 of the first 12 games like that. It's hard to argue with that philosophy. Yeah. But the Patriots did take the time to do their homework and set up a game plan that worked.
Yeah.
One more thing about the coach. He seemed to be smiling. I've never seen him so jovial like that. He seemed to be happy.
Bill?
Belichick.
Oh.
That's the happiest kind of happy.
I don't think I'd put Bill Belichick and the word
not
jovial
happy.
Together at all.
Well, it's more. And finally, he'll be facing a guy who I think is trying to be the next Belichick, which is...
Jim Harbaugh?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's actually a pretty good point. Tiffany, thank you very, very much for that. We're joined in studio now by Field Yates, who covers the Pats for ESPN Boston. Did you think that the Texans were a little scared?
I'm not so sure I saw scared. I don't know. I thought they just were overmatched. You know, I think that's what it comes down to. The Patriots got ahead early, forced them out of their rhythm, what they do best, which is grind the clock out by running the football and then beating you with the passing game when needed. But they're out of their element having to play from behind, and all of a sudden the Patriots just basically showed or sort of exerted their authority as the top team in the AFC, at least right now.
Their inexperience showed.
Yeah.
In a theater that big. The Texans just aren't used to it.
Yeah, I kind of
you know.
So.
I was a little surprised because they did have a great season last year, and I think we're probably the best team in the AFC last year.
Mm-hmm.
Were it not for their injuries, I think they probably would have been the Super Bowl champs.
That's a good point.
And they won a playoff game. They should have won a playoff game, a divisional round game in Baltimore. Yep. They know what a big game is like. They haven't had as many, obviously, but I'm surprised that they laid as big an egg as they did Monday night.
Webradio at patriots.com is how you reach us. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. John.Rook on Facebook, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. A couple of questions of the day have to do with 12-12-12. Who is the last Patriot to wear number 12 before Tom Brady? That's number one. And number two, who's your favorite 12 of all time? I can't believe nobody has answered that question.
Do we have
question
any responses
yet
on the previous?
There
12?
Are a couple. There are a couple. We'll get to those coming up momentarily, but I don't want to keep Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia, waiting any longer because he's been on hold for a while. Hello, Big Al.
Hey, fellas. What's happening? Happy 12-12-12.
Thank you very
same
much.
You.
Now, I know you've got a favorite 12 you'll share with us.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another one of these actually very easy questions for me to answer.
Okay. And?
With all due dibs to Tom Brady, Joe Namath.
Yeah.
My favorite number 12 of all time.
Yeah.
There just isn't any way to recreate. It's never going to happen again, what happened with the AFL and the NFL. Just
I
never going to happen again.
You. Thanks, Joe. I'll
yeah.
That's a huge compliment.
Yeah. That is one of the all-time greatest interviews in the history of television.
I could
Susie
care
Colbert
less
that
about the team struggling.
But listen, I was only 10 years old at the time.
Ah, yeah, right,
after Joe Namath beat the Baltimore Colts, I wanted to kiss Joe Namath.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Just thought, look.
I remember being crushed by that. I was crushed. I was a Colts fan. I was no way. I was rooting for that upstart AFL. I was not rooting for that upstart AFL. No, no. I was a Cowboy fan, so I was rooting for the NFL, baby. That's who I was rooting for.
I mean, obviously, when Namath came into the AFL, was 65, and he was just another bum that played in for a New York team, as far as I was concerned. But, of course, when he gets in the big game, I mean, all the AFL teams, we all rooted for all of the AFL teams, even though the Patriots were never one of them. We came very close in 66. We were one win away against the Jets and Joe Namath, as a matter of fact.
Right.
If we had won the game in New York, the last game of the regular season, it was played on a Saturday. They played Saturday games back then after college football was over.
Mm-hmm.
They lost in New York on Saturday. That eliminated them the last game of the season. Otherwise, they would have been one home game away from going to the first Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. How about that?
Hold
on just a second before we move on to your other things. I got to get the favorite 12s of these two guys in here. Favorite 12s.
Okay.
Favorite 12s. Come on,
Biggie. Man.
Pick a 12. Of all time.
How about Jerry Seasting?
Come on. That's not your favorite 12 of all time. It's not Jerry Seasting. The Celtics vintage Jerry Seasting? Is that what we're talking about? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Right. He was number 12.
Yes, I
believe
it. Yeah. If you're going to go basketball, at least pick a good 12. I'd say like somebody like John Stockton or somebody, right?
There
he was a 12, right?
Was he 12?
Yes, he was a 12.
He was a 12.
For the Utah Jazz. Yes.
Yeah. I liked Stockton. That's a good one, John.
Stockton is a good one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'll go with
Stockton. But is he your favorite 12 of all time?
I don't have a favorite 12 of all time.
Come on!
I don't go around rooting for numbers.
I don't believe that. Field, I know, has got one.
Can we hurry this up, please?
Yes.
Well, I'll make it quick then. You know, if we're going to stick with the local flavor, Adam Oates or 12 for the Bruins.
12 for the Bruins.
And that was, you know, if we're going to keep the local guys, keep giving them their due credit, then I'll go with Oates.
I have to go with Roger Staubach. That's my favorite 12.
Another good one.
Okay, and I know Al will agree, and he'll have to go along, concur somewhat with that one. Won't you, Al?
I'm sorry, are you through?
Wow.
Whose show is this?
Wow.
Wow. You know, John has his finger right on the button that says drop. We can do that anytime.
Al, that was totally uncalled for.
No problem. Hey, listen, that's my Christmas gift. That's my little stocking stuffer for you. Anyway,
stuff it right back to me.
No problem. I think the last number 12 on the Patriots, it's either going to be Matt Kavanaugh or Tom Ramsey. I'm not sure. I guess I'll go with Tom Ramsey. But I think they had two number 12s like back in the 80s. I don't think they had any in the 90s.
No, they did not. And I would. I'm awaiting the official confirmation just because of the actual time frame of it. I believe, and we've had two or three emailers already put this out there, I believe it was Ramsey, but I wanted to make certain that Kavanaugh wasn't stuck on the roster by the time that Ramsey had already been ditched, and that's all I'm waiting on. But you are correct, really, with both of those. It was Ramsey and or Kavanaugh were the last two guys to wear 12.
I can confirm it for you.
I think it must have been Ramsey.
You can do that?
I can.
Okay.
Ramsey was a pickup from the USFL. The USFL had gone under, and they got Ramsey out of the USFL.
Yeah.
Matt Kavanaugh was prior.
Before that. Yeah.
Okay, good.
That's absolutely.
So I'm going to say Ramsey on that.
You're going to be correct on that because it was Ramsey who was the last
guy to wear 12
Brady. He came after Kavanaugh.
Okay,
that's for sure.
There weren't any in the 90s. I'm pretty sure about that. Okay. Anyways, as far as the game Monday, listen, I don't have any nitpicks other than that fumble by Ridley. I'm glad that we didn't give up on him, though. I'm glad we recovered the ball and we didn't give up on Ridley. A couple of weeks ago, the Dolphins were playing Tennessee at home. Reggie Bush fumbled in the first quarter, and they benched him until the fourth quarter. You know, this is a veteran running back. And one fumble, and we're going to sit him for two quarters. When he came back in the game, they were trailing like 31-3. So not a good move, I don't think, by the Dolphins there. I'm glad we didn't do the same thing, you know, on Monday night. As far as the Houston, listen, I don't think anybody needs to be burying Houston. It's like we said before the game a couple of weeks ago, John. This was their third straight road game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're playing three straight. This is their third straight game on the road in December at the end of the season. I'm sorry. This is not any indicator for Houston. Let's not shovel dirt.
Yeah,
on
that's
yet.
A good point.
You're right.
We did expand upon that last week. Eric talked about it quite a bit, that this is Houston's third straight week on the road, and it could very well be that this was not an optimum performance situation for them to be in.
And they played two nail biters the last 2 weeks.
They did.
So.
Yeah,
they did.
No,
I don't think you're going to see the Patriots put a lot of stock in it either. And I think most of the guys in the post-game interviews afterward were pretty quick to say, hey, Houston's still a good team. They're saying that for a couple of reasons. Yeah. One, they realize the situation the Texans were in. Number two, they might play these guys again.
And if they do, it's going to be a different game.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Hopefully we play them in Foxborough. They just got to lose one more time.
And that could happen.
They've got two games with the Colts.
That's right.
And they got a CAP. For a game,
yep.
With the Vikings
all day.
So,
AD. Don't make the common mistake that people are making. It's AD. All day is the nickname, not AP. AD.
The guy's he's the leading rusher. So I'll call him whatever he wants to be called. He wants to be called AD or AP or APD. I don't care.
You got
but
it.
But anyways, they're going to lose one of those games, and then we're going to end up with the number one overall seed. It's interesting, the three-way tie that's going to happen at the end of the season is going to be between Denver, the Patriots, and the Houston Texans, as I mentioned last week. And, I don't think it's anything that it requires a rule change or anything, and it's not terribly unfair. It's just kind of how it worked out. But if you notice, those three teams all played each other. The Patriots, luckily, were the only one of the three to play the other two at home. We had Denver at home and Houston at home.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately for the Texans, they had to play at New England and at Denver. They managed to split in those two games, but they didn't get either one of the other two good teams at home. Denver had one at home, one on the road. We had both at home, so I think that was a good break for us.
Agreed.
The other thing I want to ask you about, is there all this chatter supposedly about how Brandon Lloyd isn't physical enough, or he isn't this, or he isn't that, or is all this knocking on Brandon? I thought he had a hell of a game Monday night.
Guys, you want to tackle that one?
Yeah, I think the stuff leading up to Week 14, they kind of built. He was an easy guy to pick on just because everything else was going right, and he's the supposed number two wide receiver who had one catch in Week 13 for 12 yards, and all of a sudden it's, does Tom Brady trust Brandon Lloyd? Is he dynamic enough to make plays on the perimeter? I think we probably just have this sort of flavor of the week mentality. It's got to be one guy week to week that we pick on, and obviously on Monday night he showed that he's an important part of this offense, and I think that as we know with this team, and it gets old saying it, but each week it's something different. One week it's Lloyd featured, the next week it's Wes Welker, then Aaron Hernandez. That's just kind of how it works. So I don't think I'd read too much into Lloyd, his stock being down. I think he kind of
If you're looking for Brandon Lloyd to be a physical receiver, then you must be looking for Tom Brady to run like a 4.4 40, okay? I mean, it just isn't going to happen. Brandon Lloyd is not going to run over anybody. He's not going to run by anybody. Oh, this is what I want Brandon Lloyd to do. I want Brandon Lloyd to make a move, get open, get beyond the sticks, catch the ball, and hit the deck. That's what I'm looking for him to do. I'm not looking for him to get the Congressional
Medal
of Honor.
Yeah.
It's
kind of what
he does. I'm not looking for him to get the Distinguished Flying Cross, okay?
Right.
All he needs is the Good Conduct Medal. Just, get past the first down, catch the ball, hit the deck. That he doesn't need to impress anybody with how tough he is.
Right.
He just needs to make the first down. That's all he has to do.
He's been the victim of, I think, overinflated expectations by too many people who thought that he was going to come in here and be another Randy Moss type player, and that's not who he is. That's not who he's ever been. He's been more of what Al just described as the, run the route, get to the sticks, make the catch, fall down. And that's to his credit, he's been better at that than the last guy that wore 85 who came in here,
be a little bit more of that.
Even better than that, much better than Brandon Lloyd, and
he
was terrible. Lloyd has at least contributed. He's been healthy. He's contributed. He's been out there. Played hurt, I think, even a few times. So I think he's where the expectation should have been for what he has produced this year.
Sure.
But expectations were far too high for him.
Yep.
Right. Al, thanks for the phone call. Got to move on here. Got some others on hold. Alvin in Texas up next in the playbook. Alvin.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
This is my second time calling. I'm just glad they won. But the problem is that I missed the game because I was at work that day. But I was still seeing the highlights over there at work at the mall. That's why.
Oh, okay,
but
no worries.
My My main concern is like about Rokoski. You know, like how bad is his hip? You know, like when he got injured. I mean, this was before.
Wait a second. Who are you talking about? Injury?
87.
Oh, Gronkowski. All right. And what about him now?
How bad was his hip? I mean, he got injured.
Well, yeah, but it's not his hip. It's his forearm. He had surgery on his forearm because he broke his arm blocking on an extra point against the Colts. So
no, I'm talking about before he had a hip.
A hip injury from early in the season. I don't think it was anything. I don't think it was anything problematic. He played through it.
Oh well, I was glad about that. And like, man, over here in Texas, like, man, they just like been dogging me out and dogging me out. They've been saying, "Oh, the Texans are going to beat the Patriots and all that." Like, are you kidding, man?
So you've been doing a fair share of gloating then, right, Alvin?
Yeah, I've been doing my homework, and I told them, no, they're not gonna lose. Man, the Patriots are the best team right now, man. Okay. Listen to PFW and listen to John Grokes. I mean, they're the greatest analysts that I know.
Well, it's very kind of you to say, but you know, it also helps the fact that you've got a football team that you follow that plays as well as they do. So.
Yeah, I mean, by the bottom of my heart, I listen to everybody. Those two. You know, those two radios, I mean, yours and PFW. I mean, if I wanna really win, you know, I wanna bragging right, that's the thing.
Well, that's why we're here, for Patriots fans who are, you know, outside of our New England area here primarily, and you just can't get enough of your, enough talk or even coverage of your favorite football team. Well, that's why we're here. That's why you gotta tune in.
I want to make a quick comment. Yesterday, I was calling because I was trying to like put my two cents about the Patriots. WWEI, man, they just dogged me out because I was on Texas. They thought I was a bandwagon. I said, "How dare you say that?" Wow. And one of my friends from Patriots Facebook, PFW Empire, said, "Alvin's a diehard, a true fan, and all this," and he posted on their email.
Okay.
They're like, man, thanks a lot. Because I'm not a bandwagon. I'm just a true diehard Patriot. Because I live in Texas.
I realize that. No question. Just make sure next time you try to call those guys, though, you have to say, you know, Alvin, the Patriots fan from Texas.
Oh.
Because then the producers will realize, oh, okay, well, this isn't just some Texans fan that wants to gloat or call or what have you. You got to say, hey, I'm a Pats fan from Texas.
But I really wanted to meet the greatest wide receiver of all time. I mean, Troy Brown.
Oh, when they had Troy Brown on during Patriots Monday? Yeah, understood. Well,
yeah,
all I can tell you is you'll have another shot because I know he's a part of that coverage, I think, just about every Monday, Alvin. Thanks for the phone call. Let's go to Chester in Portland, Oregon. Chester, you're in the playbook.
Hey, guys. Good to be in today. How you doing?
Thanks. Doing great. I have to say, though, that both Eric and Field had to step out because practice is getting ready to get started, and they've got to be there to cover the first 15 minutes of it.
No worries, John. Good to talk to you, my friend. Listen, I just wanted to chime in quickly on a couple points here. Number one, the Texans quitting, you know, or quote-unquote, at the fourth quarter there. You know, in my opinion, that's what separates champions that have been there before and new teams that are new to this thing. You know, to me, what it tells your players is it's okay to check out if it's not your day. You know, I think that may have sold against any other opponent, but knowing that the Pats and Houston are more than likely going to meet up later in the playoffs, I think you gotta give your players some line to know that they can at least come back in an adverse situation like that, especially knowing the secondary's history. Now, that being said, you know, our defense is playing different. My second point here is to piggyback on the Tlaib addition and, you know, how this is affecting our team semantically here. But, you know, I for one have said from the start that, you know, you add a new guy into the fold, it changes the culture of the status quo. You know, any of us working guys knows there's a new guy at the interview table. We're all going to step up our game, just to chime on what you said before. I've been kind of rolling on that stance. Now, there's also been another conversation piece of saying that, you know, his addition simply has slotted the rest of the personnel into their rightful place, you know, i.e. with Arrington into the slot. You know, I believe that as well. But I think overall, this is all of our defensive line's effort to get this quarterback and, you know, knocking them one step off of their route. But whatever viewpoint there is, this addition of Tlaib has more than benefited our defense. I love the edge that it brings of the what if the ball is not in the right spot and, you know, where our guys are going to go in terms of, you know, returning some for 6 points. So
yeah.
You know, just wanted to chime in on that topic. Netting it all out, I feel great about where we're at here. And if we can get this one seed, I'd love to see this Houston team back in Foxborough with some real cold weather. And, you know, again, mentally, I just think that this may have changed their culture in the locker room in terms of, you know, how they perceive themselves under adversity.
I think that's a great point, Chester, because the Texans did say, those that cared to talk about the game at all after the game, and you can understand why they'd be a little bit shell-shocked, but they did go out of their way to say, hey, look, I think we got schooled a little bit on Monday night. I think we learned what it's like to, you know, wear big boy pants and what it's like to play in big games, and I think the Patriots, you know, just went about their business, and I think we can take, you know, this as an example of how we should conduct ourselves in our preparation and during the course of a game. And the Texans were very complimentary toward the Patriots, and I think the Texans would love to have another shot at New England. I think they'd love to have them at home. I don't know that they're going to get that chance, but if they do, I think we're looking at a completely, completely different game. And really, you just, it would be no more apparent than this year. You have to throw the regular season meeting out the window, because it will have very little bearing on what these two teams might face with each other if they do see each other in the playoffs.
Yes. And I even think if we're on the road, I really like our chances here. I think that there's a certain error of our team, you know, against Houston in terms of their viewpoint there. And I think mentally they're going to really have to look uphill in terms of what it's going to take to you know, out hustle this team. And
I agree with that. I agree with that. And that's also a very good point. Does going to Houston scare you at all? No. Not at all. I got to admit, the one thing that really scares me or would concern me as a Patriots fan would be going to Denver. That one might concern me a little bit.
I agree.
That's the only one that does, though.
Right. Well, so I just think we got to keep our intensity, and unlike Houston here, we got to play 60 minutes every game no matter what the you know, the Jacksonville game is the blip on the radar to me right now. I think every other game, you know, really has its little flair on the schedule, Miami just being a division opponent. But, you know, to me, I just think we really got to keep this mental edge, and I love this momentum that we're carrying.
Well,
right now,
I would say that these guys certainly know how to do that, at least the veterans that have been on this team over the last several years. And, of course, there are fewer of those than I think people really realize. But those guys realize that, you know, there is another prize to be had here, and that is to get the one seed, and they do have a chance. And if they stub their toe this week against San Francisco, or somehow they stub their toe against either Jacksonville or Miami to close out the year, that's off the table. In fact, they risk losing the bye altogether if they lose one of these next three games. So hopefully that edge is maintained, because they realize they got to keep winning in order to get what the ultimate prize would be here.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right. Exactly. I like our chances against San Francisco, by the way, on that end.
I'm kind of tending to believe that myself right now. And, you know, I think it's all going to come down to whether or not they allow Colin Kaepernick to be Kaepernick, and whether or not they can, you know, if they, you know, are they going to keep him hemmed in enough, because the guy's going to make plays with his legs as well as with his arm. And I think if they force him to be one dimensional, I think that could have everything to do with the Patriots' success on Sunday night.
Yeah, Mayo's going to be the guy. Seeing the way that he's played recently, too, I feel real good about him spying a guy like Kaepernick. He's shown a renewed sense of enthusiasm and some spring in his step.
Good point.
You know, from what I saw, he's just really starting to look like the player we had all hoped to see, aside from the tackling machine there.
That's a good point.
You know, all the knockdowns that Watt was giving Brady, I felt like Mayo was giving the same punch on Schaub there. And that's the key to keeping the secondary fresh, is we've got to have guys like Mayo and Spikes and Vince Wilfork, you know, in there after the quarterback, and it's something that we just haven't seen for some time. So.
That's a great point, Chester. I do think that you'll see somebody spy Kaepernick. I do agree with that, and it very well could be Mayo.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks a million for giving me the floor here, and let's go Pats. Take care.
All right, Chester. Good stuff. Chester in Portland, Oregon. Let's just plow right along here. Sean's in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hey, Sean, you're in the playbook.
Hey, thanks. Great to be here. I want to talk about the game plan from Monday's game.
Yep.
The Patriots always take away the opponent's perceived top threat. And what I saw from Monday, it seemed like the Patriots were determined to stop Foster from running the ball. And that makes sense. And I think that worked, especially, you know, we saw lots of one-on-one coverage with Tlaib as well as Dennard. But I think Houston made the error of, you know, trying to do the same thing. It seemed like, especially in the beginning of the game, they were really trying to take away the Patriots' run game, which, you know, to some extent makes sense because Patriots have been running the ball well. But you can't underestimate your opponent. You have to know who you're playing, and you can't give Tom Brady that kind of one-on-one coverage, because on all the play action, Brady was taking them apart. And, I mean, Matt Schaub's not the same thing. You could do that to Matt Schaub, but you can't leave one-on-one with Welker or with Hernandez or anyone, that even Lloyd, because it was really killing us, Houston. And I'm wondering, you know, if San Francisco's going to try and do the same thing, and on the reverse extent, if Patriots are going to do the same thing with the 49ers, how is Talib? I really hope that he's back, because it'd be great to be able to have that pressure with the one-on-one coverage.
Well, it's obviously very, very early to say anything about Talib. We know that he was not in the locker room after the game was over Monday night. Typically, guys that are hurt, if they're, you know, really hurt, then they're not around for people to ask them, how hurt are you? And that's usually a sign. I can tell you that, as an example, Alphonso Dennard, who pulled his hammy a little bit, I believe, during the game, he was in the locker room, and he just said, hey, look, I can't talk about my injury. You guys know that. So I expect Dennard to be back. I actually have heard from a couple of people that they also believe Talib will be back. But again, we won't know definitively until, you know, the injury report comes out. My guess would be questionable, and then my guess would be, depending upon how practice goes the remainder of the week, whether or not he has any setbacks. So, but I don't think it's something that will keep him, shall we say, off the shelf for a while. You might see, you know, maybe they decide, you know, to keep him out for a week so he can, you know, rest it, but I don't think it was a situation, or at least an injury was, that the game was already getting out of hand when he hurt himself on Monday. And so I think they kind of took him out as a precaution, to be quite honest with you.
I think Cole was in there for a while when he was.
Yes, Marquise Cole was in there. Marquise Cole. Yes, he was in there.
But I also believe towards the end we saw McCourty play a bit of corner again.
Mm-hmm.
And he seemed to do okay.
I love Devin's. His versatility is fantastic. And you know how the Patriots just, they love guys who can, you know, go both ways, so to speak. And he's able to do that. And I think the Patriots clearly are a stronger team when he's in the secondary at a safety slot. And we saw a perfect example of that when he came from out of nowhere to get that first Matt Schaub interception and basically turn the entire game around. I mentioned that in the opening hour of the program today, that, you know, to me, that was where the entire game hinged. On that interception, he made a play, and it put the Patriots on their way to a 14-0 lead and slamming the door in the face of the Texans, and it was just basically all over after that. And he's playing with so much confidence back there. It's a safety with cornerback instincts, and to me that says everything, because he knows where he's got to be on the field. He knows where he's got to be.
If Schaub would have gone to Foster on that, it might have been 7-7. So, yeah, was it?
No
huge,
doubt.
Huge play.
No doubt. Huge play, huge turnaround right there. And McCourty gets all the credit.
Definitely. Well, it was great, and I'm looking forward to the Niners game on Sunday night. That's another possible big match preview. So, that should be another huge game.
No doubt. No doubt. We know this. We talked about it last week, that these 2 weeks were the 2 weeks that Patriots fans have been waiting for all season long, and that if the Patriots somehow won these two games, that the entire, you know, football planet would be all on New England. And I think that they're already on New England, even after just the one game, because of the way that they beat Houston on Monday night. But if you lose to San Francisco, I think it's going to knock everything down a notch, and it's going to show, you know, that the NFC might still be superior this year, and it's going to also knock the Patriots out of the position that they are in right now, and that is to get a bye in the opening round. So you can still do some damage if you don't take care of things this Sunday night.
Yeah, and I mean, if they lose, you kind of have to hope that Baltimore beats Denver this weekend. It's a really weird thing for us.
Which is also true. Yeah, that's true. The one thing that you can be assured of right now is that you're going to get to play a game, whatever you play it, but you're going to play a game at home.
Right, and it'd be nice to have the bye.
It'd be nice to go into the second week, without a doubt. There's no question, and that way guys get extra chance to rest up, and I think this year as well as any other year, but you always want to try to play for the bye if you have it, because you have a chance now to kind of sit back and look and take care of the little things that maybe can get you to the ultimate game and rest everybody at the same time that needs to be rested.
The one player that the Patriots can't lose, and I think everyone knows this, is Tom Brady.
Well, there's no doubt about that. There's just,
we saw Mallett come in late in the game, and it was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and somebody just actually texted me on that, or actually sent me an email. An email on that one saying, hey, I have a nitpick, Ryan Mallett. Well, he throws one pass, he gets picked. And I understand that thought process. I get that. And, you know, it actually was a pad that was batted up in the air. So, you know, that's something that he has to learn. But a guy who's 6'6", 6'7", you wouldn't think he'd have too much trouble getting passes batted down. He did on that one. And I said, well, that's as legitimate a nitpick as you can come up with, you know, after what transpired overall on Monday night. I don't disagree with that at all.
Well, you got to give Brady a lot of credit and the offensive line a lot of credit for that, because that's the one huge concern with the Texans.
It was. Well, the Patriots did play, and this was an interesting report. And, Sean, thanks for the call. This was an interesting report that I saw actually ESPN come up with as part of their coverage going into the game, was that in practice last week, the Patriots actually had their ends against the scout team hold up like lacrosse sticks. From what I understand, or tennis racquetball rackets, that's what it was, racquetball rackets at the end, and forced Brady to have to throw over racquetball rackets, sort of simulating, you know, what he would face with their ends, in particular J.J. Watt and his penchant for knocking down balls, which he has 15 passes defense this year. And maybe it worked, or maybe it just got him used to seeing, you know, things up in his grill. And, you know, obviously a guy like Mallett maybe that didn't get the reps against that kind of a look, and it affected him. Before we get a break in here, Kev, let's go to Bad Kevin. Bad Kevin, you're in the playbook.
How you doing, John?
Good, man. What's happening?
Hey, I want to piggyback real quick on the Ryan Mallett discussion.
Sure.
When I was watching it on TV, when he dropped back on that play-action pass,
yep,
did I hear the crowd go absolutely insane? Because it sounded like there was an uproar as soon as he dropped back to pass, as in, we're excited to see what this kid can do.
Of course. Of course.
I didn't know if it was the same, you know, if my ears.
I think it sounded like. First of all,
everybody just got excited real fast.
Yeah, first of all, the crowd obviously had grown somewhat complacent and quiet because the game was out of reach. And
right.
So the game's out of reach, and here's Ryan Mallett getting ready to throw the football. And I think, sure, naturally, those that are going to be left are going to be somewhat excited over that, A, because the Patriots are throwing the ball when you're up, you know, by 42-14 or 42-7 at the time. And B, because, yeah, you want to see what the guy can do against pretty decent competition. And,
right.
Yeah, it got tipped, it got picked, and it led to the last points, and I think we all get that, and no harm, no foul. But my whole point is I'm glad at the very least that he was in there in that position to learn from these situations, because there's just nothing like being in the line of fire. You can talk about it, you can game plan, you can watch film, you can practice, but unless you're in there in the line of fire with these guys breathing down your necks and doing these things, you just don't really learn it. And I think that was a step in the right direction.
Couldn't agree with you more. Quick, I wanted to ask you your thoughts. From my vantage point, I think Vince Wilfork is having his best year yet.
Wow. Yeah, I kind of mentioned as much a little bit. I think either was last week, maybe the week before. I don't remember, but you're 110% correct.
And this guy is doing things that a man his size shouldn't do.
I realize
week in and week out for three down. I mean, he's a three down player.
Well, there's no question about that, Kevin. And the thing is that, and I did talk about this a little last week, J.J. Watt's getting all the numbers. And even Vince Wilfork was asked a little about that by the ESPN guys, I think, prior to, and I think a little bit in the postgame coverage on Monday night. And I think we realize that while Watt's putting up the numbers and probably is certainly a favorite for Defensive Player of the Year, in my mind, Wilfork is as valuable a defender in the entire NFL as anybody else this year because of what he means to this Patriot team that continues to improve. And the fact is that he is a three-down guy. The fact is that he does clog the middle. The fact is that teams try to run away from him, that, and when teams do run at him, they double him and sometimes triple him, and he's still making plays and wreaking
right. Well,
havoc.
That was their first score. They ran away. They had to run. Anyway, in regards to Vince.
Yes.
If he continues this path, do the Patriots have to win a Super Bowl for him to be considered as a Hall of Fame defensive lineman, or is that not even a topic for him?
Well, That's a great Zen question. I'm not sure that I can even answer that. I tell you that I think he's certainly on the road to being a dominant, you know, thought of as a dominant defensive lineman during his era, which would certainly put him on the path to Canton. But if the Patriots do manage to win, I think that will help the process because let's face it, he's not a glamour guy. He's not an offensive guy. He's not a guy that can carry the football or throw the football or catch the football, which I think will help his cause. If you're a defender who's been a part of two or three championships and you've had significant roles on those championships, I think your chances are significantly better at being enshrined.
Yeah, I think the world of him. I think we're in deep without him. One last thing. Are you worried about Randy Moss this week at all?
No. Actually, I'm kind of looking forward to it because you know he's going to be juiced. I totally agree. I think he'll be pumped. And I think he'll want to show the Patriots, "Hey, you had a chance to take me. You didn't take me." And, you know, I hope we see some of the Moss masks come back out. And I mean, why not? We should, you know, celebrate having Randy Moss when we had him because he was a significant part of, you know, some of the best offenses that ever played in the NFL. And I don't wish
the best year of his career.
No question. And I don't begrudge him anything at all. No ill will toward Randy Moss at all. But the fact remains is that, you know, he's just not the player he once was. That's why the Patriots gave up on him. I think they parted company at about the right time. You know, San Francisco doesn't even really go to him all that often, but they have him sort of as a threat back there. I'm more worried about Michael Crabtree than I am anybody else, to be quite honest with you right now.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah, he's a very good player. But I'm glad he's coming back, and that's going to add to the intrigue on Sunday without a doubt.
Absolutely. Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. Great work.
Thank you, Ben Kevin. Appreciate that. All right. Do we want to try to – we're going to get a timeout in here? Because we haven't taken one all day because the phone lines have been jammed. And I'm very much appreciative of that. It's a good job out of you today. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. And, again, the Ace Ticket Hotline. And they're open for the first time in the 75 minutes since we began the program. 508-298-0398. That's the number to call. John.Rook on Facebook, @JRBroadcaster on Twitter. A couple of questions, and we did have one of them answered. The last 12 to wear 12 for the Patriots, other than the current 12, Tom Brady, was Tom Ramsey, also a quarterback for the Pats. But who's your favorite 12 of all time? Football? Any other sport? Who's the favorite 12 that you rooted for, that you liked, that you followed, maybe just because it was the number 12, or maybe because you thought he was a great athlete? I'm just curious to know on this 12-12-12. We're going to get into a timeout, and then coming up in 10 minutes, Sports Illustrated's Peter King in the playbook.
Ah, that is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of a smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Contractors, having trouble getting a construction bond? Did you miss the chance to bid a job because your agent didn't support you? Give me a call. My name is Brent Cross. I want to be your bond agent. Call 800-999-7345. That's 800-999-7345. Online at crossagency.com. Cross Insurance is one of New England's largest providers of construction bonds. Don't miss out on any more work. Cross Insurance, the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots.
Welcome to Dunkin' Donuts.
I need some of Dunkin's delicious packaged coffee.
Sure, how many do you need?
One for everybody on my holiday shopping list.
Wow, so that's why you brought a wheelbarrow.
Give the gift everyone loves to get. Delicious Dunkin' Donuts packaged coffee. Get 2 pounds for just $12.99. Available only at Dunkin' restaurants. America runs on Dunkin'. Plus applicable taxes. Single pound sold at regular price. Offer excludes 8-ounce packages. Participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
Nitpick Tuesday on a Wednesday, of course, just because Patriots Monday was on a Tuesday. It kind of happens when you play Monday Night Football. John Rook back inside Patriots Playbook. Peter King, again, SI and NBC, joined us here in about 5 minutes. In the meantime, let's get back to the phones because they have been slamming today. Jefferson in Salt Lake City, you're in the playbook.
John, what's up?
How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Doing well. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Big, big fan.
Thank you.
Being from Salt Lake City, you're asking who the favorite number 12 is.
Right.
I got to say, John Stockton.
We mentioned him. And in fact, we're saying, Eric Scalavino mentioned in the last hour, he said 12s. How about Jerry Seasting? And I said, oh, come on. Really? That's not, I mean, you know, I said, if you want a 12 from basketball that really meant something, how about John Stockton? I said that.
I'll tell you, man, I'm a diehard Patriots fan. I mean, 12 has always been my number, whether I played basketball or football in high school. And John Stockton, from the day that I could even function mentally, was just an absolute idol of mine. I don't think I ever went to a Utah Jazz game that he lost, actually, you know, living out here. But
he epitomized point guard, Jefferson. He did.
There is no other point guard. I mean, I know people talk about, you know, I mean, with Pete Maravich, obviously, he plays for the New Orleans Jazz. But, you know, I mean, point guards nowadays, we have Deron Williams, who's, you know, one of the best point guards out there. You got Chris Paul and everybody out there. There is nobody who could ham an egg and who played as hard as John Stockton. Do you know that John Stockton, they have up and down drills every day in Utah Jazz, and I'm sure every NBA practice where they run the up and downs until his final season. He won that every single practice that he was at, except for, I think, one when he came off knee surgery in one of his last years.
Right.
But I mean, that guy, you never saw anybody work as hard as that, as little Johnny Stockton, man. There's nobody who is more clutch. I think probably the only athlete that I can think that is about as clutch as John Stockton is Tom Brady. And well, there wearing the same number. Maybe there's a correlation there.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. I like that. That's a good comparison. Yeah.
Anyway, just want to throw my 2 cents out there. Big fan, love what you do, and I'll let you get back to it.
Thanks, Jefferson. Appreciate the phone call. All right, so Salt Lake City in the house, checking in today. Let me get a couple of these emails and a couple of Twitters and a couple of our Facebook posts here. On the Twitter account, at JR Broadcaster, Cavern says, fan of 12 Kirk Cousins for what he did to Baltimore. I like that one, Cav. That's good. Nice. Yeah, that's a good one. Stepping right up, baby. Stepping right up. In for RG3 and got it done for the Redskins last week.
Got to admit, I came in. Well, it was kind of a twofold visit here. So Sunday,
yeah,
a rare Sunday that you and I have off where, you know, you can actually sit and watch football.
Watch football, right.
Now, the reason that I did not purchase my subscription to Red Zone is because I'm never home on Sunday.
Exactly.
So I'm always here. So it doesn't make any sense to buy it and use it for 2 weeks, right?
Exactly.
So I'm like, oh, man, like, do I want to go to a friend's house? Like, what do I want to do? And then I sort of realized, like, once 1 o'clock hit, we weren't getting that Baltimore-Washington game here locally. We got the Pittsburgh-San Diego game. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of bummed out about that because I really didn't want to watch Pittsburgh.
That's why I still have the Sunday ticket. I just don't have the Red Zone as part of Sunday ticket.
Yeah,
but I kept it this year for that.
You're a man of, you know, stature, and you're in a different tax bracket than me.
Not hardly, brother. Nope, not
so,
really.
So I'm kind of debating, and I'm like, well, what do I do? So I was like, oh, I could, you know, do some work, get ready for Monday, and go in.
Yep.
So I came in here to the studio, like halfway through that Baltimore-Washington game, plopped on the Red Zone, did some editing for Monday night's pre- and post-game show, and had myself a little, like, six-hour party in here watching Red Zone. And when he threw that pass, I was, like, jumping up and down, jumping around. The ESPN crew has this room right outside of our studio.
Right.
And one of the guys popped his head in the window because I was screaming so loud. He thought someone was getting axe murdered. But I'm a Michigan State guy, too. So seeing him.
So you got to love Kirk Cousins.
Seeing
him
do something was like a twofold, you know, double bonus for
me. That's huge.
So I was really, really I mean, that was big.
I like
because now, like, you were talking. I didn't want to interrupt you earlier, but. You were talking about how if the Patriots stumble, they're probably not going to end up with a bye.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that it can really work out, so if the Patriots lose to the 49ers this Sunday, but if Baltimore beats Denver, which is very possible, the game's in Baltimore, that would create another logjam of teams that would be now, 10-4? Because Baltimore is 9-4, so they would go to 10-4. Denver's 10-3, so they'd go to 10-4, and the Patriots would go to 10-4. So if we're really rooting for Baltimore to beat Denver because that's the only way, the only possible avenue that the Patriots can lose one of these three games and still get a bye.
Yeah, I would say that you're probably right.
So it's
Baltimore
weird.
Should.
So it's weird.
Yeah.
We're rooting so hard against Baltimore.
And now you want to root for them to.
You're rooting for them to win.
Probably rooting for them to beat
Denver.
Such a
strange league. Such a strange year.
It's bizarre. That's why you really, you know, other than your own team, to thine own self be true, right? You know, you just, because you don't know when you're going to have to root for the guys that you hate now. That's a good point. Michael says on Facebook, he says, nitpicks from the Texans game. Stalled drives after starting very strong. Shouldn't take 4 drives to make adjustments. Another nitpick, stalling on the drive to start the third quarter. The point in having that opportunity is to come out strong, not give the opponent another chance. I'm also wondering how the constant change in receiving core is going to affect the late season consistency. Sure, Brady is an excellent quarterback, but a steady rapport with receivers would be nice. And P.S., there's a reason why the Patriots don't get many 1 p.m. games. Media crews should not complain. No question. And then he says, my prediction is that we won't see the Texans again. I think they will split their matches with Indianapolis, and then the Texans will lose their divisional playoff game. Denver may be our opponent in one of the playoff games, but the game will be in Foxborough. Let's go to Tim, who says, Kev said the Texans would take a leak down their leg. Give him a prize. That's true. I think he did say that. So that's a good job out of you, Tim, to bring that out. And he goes, I know the Texans D-line is good, but one thing they weren't prepared for, and I don't think you can emulate them with a scout team, is to hurry up the pads run. They were broken long before they pulled the starters. One tackle on the ball carrier had Watt lay on him, not letting him up, just to get some wind. I've never seen Vince puff and blow like they're more touted all-stars. That's also true. And then he says, screw the Rats for this week. They were awesome, and a performance like that would beat anyone. Interesting. All right, we'll come back to our tweets and our Facebook posts and our emails in a moment, but I want to bring into the program Peter King from Sports Illustrated, SI.com, senior writer, and also contributor to NBC Sports coverage. Of course, NBC will have the Sunday Night Football Game of the Week right here at Gillette Stadium against the San Francisco 49ers this Sunday night. Peter, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks for taking a little bit of time to visit with Pats fans this week.
Hey, my pleasure. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you, sir. Were you as, I guess, surprised as most of Patriots fans were surprised over, I guess, really the one-sidedness of Monday night's game?
Well, I was surprised by two things. One, that that the Houston offense could not match the New England offense or even come close to matching it punch for punch.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that this was going to be a shootout kind of game. But Matt Schaub just didn't come up big, had that early turnover that was a terrible decision by him on the interception. And then, I mean, even though Brady got hit a lot, I was disappointed in the ability of Houston's defensive front, which is a top three defensive front in the league. I was disappointed in their inability to get to Brady before he threw the ball.
Right.
And, I mean, by the end of the day, J.J. Watt had laid, I think, four pretty good shots on him. But unfortunately for them, I think two of them came, you know, right after Brady released the ball and caused incompletions. But, you know, the difference, I think, in a game like this has to be Brady is so efficient that if you're not going to make it difficult for him to hit his hot receiver or for him to hit short guys, you know, on curl patterns and things like this, then just you have no chance of beating him because he's going to get rid of the ball so quickly. So, I mean, those are the two things I thought that really made a big difference in the game.
Well, I think that maybe the way that the Patriots exploited Houston defensively might help, you know, some, could potentially help some future opponents of the Texans on down the line. Can you also, along the same lines of what you were just talking about here, can you also make book on the Patriots and realizing that, hey, if by some chance you're not disrupting Tom Brady in that first 3 or 4 seconds after the snap of the football, you're just not going to disrupt him?
New England's the best team in football in all ways. I mean, they're not the best defense, but I'm just saying that, you know, even if some team, I mean, Miami, which has done great things against New England in the past few years, not every time they've played, but often they have, you know, because they know them so well, even though they have a new coaching staff, Miami has a good idea how to frustrate the Patriots.
Yeah.
But I think other teams, especially teams that don't face them very often, I think they're surprised by the multiplicity of what New England can do on offense. You know, Danielle Manning said to me last week that, you know, when you watch the Patriots on tape, what you notice is Tom Brady just doesn't care. He doesn't care who he goes to. And it was amazing to see them cut Vasante Shenko yesterday because as Manning said to me last week, he said, he's always one of the toughest tight ends I ever face. And so, you know, clearly, you know, the number of options that Tom has at this point in his career and the options in the running game, you know, has to be as many as he's ever had. And I mean ever, and that includes the Randy Moss year. It's hard for me to imagine, especially when Gronkowski comes back, that if you beat the Patriots, you're either going to have to win a shootout or you're going to have to be the New York Giants. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, every time the Patriots have played the Giants lately, the Giants have really frustrated them.
They certainly have. So if the Achilles heel is still the defense, it seems to us that, number one, the constant factor in the Patriots' defense, not only holding the fort, so to speak, but maybe improving, is the play of number 75, Vince Wilfork. And not the least.
Vince Wilfork was unbelievable Monday night. I mean, he was far and away the best defensive player on the field. And other than Tom Brady, he was the best player on the field. And I think that his ability to do so many things at this point in his career, to be disruptive against the run, and to be quick enough to be a really good when they have him in position to be a three technique guy, you know, and to get into the backfield, he's just so hard to block. And I think they've been helped by the fact that the Patriots now, and if it keeps going the way it has in the first couple weeks of the, of the Aqib Talib experiment, if he backstops them the way he has and solidifies the play in the secondary the way he has, even if he doesn't re-sign with them, I think that what you're going to see is he'll be worth a fourth-round pick. I mean, it's a big price to pay, but if you don't have a solid cornerback situation, at some point in the playoffs, it's really going to rise up to bite you. And right now, I think he is. He's really upgraded them at corner, as everybody has seen.
No question. Statistics are also bearing that out. Peter, one more on Vince Wilfork. Even though, you're getting other defenders with gaudier numbers, and certainly J.J. Watt comes to mind, can a guy like Wilfork truly get recognition as a potential defensive player of the year?
I would doubt it. I think he's got too many guys ahead of him right now. I think Geno Atkins, for the first 13 weeks of the season, probably has been the best defensive tackle in football. And, then beside that, you got Watt, Von Miller, and Alden Smith. I mean, this is going to be and I wouldn't be surprised if Wilfork got a few votes, but it would surprise me if he could win. Now, if he plays great in the last 3 weeks of the season, creates a bunch of turnovers, is as disruptive as he's been, and does this, especially in a national TV game like Sunday night, who knows? There's 3 weeks left. He can still make it hot for the other guys. But, I mean, if you look at J.J. Watt, I might be one off here, but
sure.
Here we are, 13 games into the season, 16 and a half sacks, playing the run great, and 16 passes batted down, which is more than any guy has ever had in the 2 decades that they've been keeping that. And then Von Miller is playing great, and Alden Smith, he needs 3.5 sacks to set the single-season sack record. So those would be that's pretty tough competition for anybody, but we'll see.
Well, you mentioned a couple of the Niners in there, and it stands to reason that the Patriots will have another dose of one of the NFL's best coming in on Sunday or Sunday night. I have to admit, and certainly our fans I think recognize this, that it certainly is the Patriots' good fortune to have these teams at home at Gillette. So are we able to get a true read on these teams in terms of their relative worth and maybe toward the Patriots' worth toward them in being a contender just because this game is being played at home?
Well, to me, I sort of feel that the home field edge has sort of lessened in importance in the last few years. You look at the last 7 seasons. I wrote about this the other day. You look at the last 7 Super Bowl winners. I mean, in those postseasons in the last 7 years, visiting teams have won 29 games. That means that on average 4 playoff games are being won out of 10 every year in the postseason. I think you're noticing it too. Late in the season, that it's a lot more important to be playing great down the stretch than to be at home.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't necessarily think that if the Patriots beat the 49ers by 10 points, I certainly won't say, unless there's some freak snowstorm and Colin Kaepernick is playing in snow for the first time in his life, I won't look back and say, boy, if that game had been in San Francisco, it'd be different. I really don't think the Patriots play a lot different no matter where the game is, and I think most good teams are like that.
What's the one matchup that you're looking forward to the most, perhaps, on Sunday night? Is there one that you've sort of targeted already?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Patriots. I thought the Patriots did a good job sort of clogging lanes for J.J. Watt the other day. It always seemed like he was hit by more than one person, except when he took the wide rush around the edge. And so, you know, to me, I think it'll be interesting to see how the Patriots block Aldon Smith.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a tendency, obviously, to play over the left tackle or play on the outside of the left tackle, but he's also gone on the other side as well. So I'll be interested to see how they match up against Aldon Smith. And then on the other side, I always like to see when the 49ers play somebody. I mean, you look at their defensive front, and I always like to see if you watch the 49ers, you watch how teams line up against Justin Smith.
Right.
Because he's helped by the fact that not only does he have Aldon Smith on the outside, he's got tremendous help, you know, on the interior part of the line, too. So I think it's going to be a good test. I thought Dante Scarnecchi, a past Monday's test, was flying colors because I think he had his guys ready to play and had his guys ready to play well to protect Brady. And even though Brady got hit, he was able to put damage sometimes before he got hit. So I started to have some to block him off long enough to make plays.
Agreed. Obviously your phone's breaking up just a little bit, so I've got one more. We'll see if we can squeeze this in. What are you working on Sunday night that you might be able to tease us with in terms of the television coverage? Any type of feature or any type of matchup comparison?
You know, I don't know what the game guys are doing, but I know that Tony Dungy, the thing that I like about what Tony does when he looks at these games is he will find out a way, and this is why I always tell people to watch this. Tony will figure out a way, because he'll watch enough tape, and he'll figure out whether is the Aldon Smith matchup the most important one,
right?
Or does he have another one that he finds? You know, will he see, for instance, Michael Crabtree against Tlaib or something like that? Or Vernon Davis basically being treated like a wide receiver, which I think very often the 49ers do, but I'm sure, you know, Dungy's in his rec room right now or somewhere at home in Tampa figuring out what he thinks the most important matchup is, and he's usually right.
Well, I know that there are a lot of Pats fans that, in fact, they've said it here on this program. They really enjoy what, the NBC crew does on Sunday nights in terms of the analysis of the game. And there's a lot of fans of Tony Dungy around here and what you guys do. So keep up the good work, Peter, and we'll be reading you on SI.com again this week as well.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot for having me.
You got it. Peter King, Sports Illustrated, SI.com. NBC, Football Night in America, coming up here on Sunday night as the Pats get the 49ers. And Eric Scalavino from PFW has reappeared. I assume that means that they've kicked you out of practice already.
Yeah, yes, they have. And I wanted to give you a quick update just because people were speculating a lot about Gronkowski.
Yes.
Whether or not he might practice this week.
Yes.
If he does, it won't be till tomorrow because he wasn't at the walkthrough. That I just came from.
Okay, so no Gronk at the walkthrough.
No Gronk at the walkthrough. No Brandon Spikes either, at least that any of us could tell. They're in the walkthrough. They don't wear their jerseys, so it's harder. They don't have any
major.
I mean, they do have some clothing that has their numbers on it, but it's really small.
Okay. Should we read anything into that?
Well, he has been listed on the injury report, and if you probably saw in the game the other day, he looked like he was struggling a little bit with his lower body at points in the game. Looked like he was limping a little bit. So, and he has been riding the exercise bike at practice quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. So,
interesting. All right.
Not a total shock that he wasn't there, or at least none of us saw him there. But something to keep an eye on. He did play throughout the game against Houston.
Yep.
But just something to monitor there.
Okay.
Kyle Love was the third and only other one that none of us saw. And there might be a very reasonable explanation for his absence, other than an injury, because he has been limited as well with a knee.
Right.
His wife was several months pregnant and due at any moment. And according to his Twitter feed, thanks to some detective work by myself and our good buddy Mary Paoletti from CSN. Kyle's Twitter feed today was talking about this being the big day.
So this could be the big day.
It could be that he wasn't there because his wife had given birth.
Nice.
So that's
okay. Well, we'll hope for the best there.
Hopefully, for the best for him.
Which, by the way, of course, totally went. It happened after we were done with, you know, the playbook last week. But obviously, Tom and Giselle, and you know, this was an issue on the show a month ago. We were talking about this, looking forward to the possibility of, hey, does Brady have a decision to make? And clearly, they were able to time things out properly.
And I wonder if nobody's been talking about Kyle Lovin, whether or not he has a decision to make. I feel a little. I would think he might feel a little slighted there.
Yeah, I mean, come on, really? Same thing, right?
Yeah, but Deion Branch was there.
Good. So he was there. Yep. So he's back in force.
He's back in force. The new guy, another new guy they signed, Tony Logan.
Logan,
wide receiver / kick return guy from Maryland, who's on the practice squad at the moment.
Right.
He was there. So that was pretty much it. And as soon as everybody arrived, we got kicked out. So. Yep. Best we could tell was those three, Spikes, Gronk, and Love.
Okay.
And we think we have reasons for all three.
Okay. All right, so we'll update further then on Gronk tomorrow when they actually get back to doing the practicing part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And maybe in the locker room if we happen to spot him today, because that's coming up later, so maybe we'll have some of that to update you on, too.
All right, so you'll want to make sure that you check back in here on Patriots.com just so you can get the latest update on that one. Thanks for the update,
Ian. All right, buddy.
Let's go to Neil in Montreal. Neil, you're in the playbook. Thanks for hanging on, buddy.
Yeah, it was great listening to Peter King while I was waiting. I didn't realize it at first, and I said, geez, that guy's talking a long time. And then I said, oh, that's Peter King.
Yes, exactly.
I've got to follow Peter King. That's tough.
Yeah, well, that's all right. It's okay. We all have to follow Peter King. So,
anyway, I just wanted to elaborate on something. I think your producer was talking about we got a route for Baltimore this weekend, and part of the information he gave wasn't correct. So for a Patriots fan, I figure I'd help clarify things. If the Patriots lose the game to San Francisco, which is certainly possible, if Denver wins, then they would be a number three seed, and the only way they could get back to number two seed is if Denver loses at home to either the Browns or the Chiefs, which I'd say, and I'm sure most people would agree, is very, very remote. If Baltimore wins, though, Patriots are still in third place. Why? Because the three teams would be tied, Denver, Baltimore, and New England, and Baltimore has beaten each of them, will have beaten each of them. So Baltimore would be in second place. However, their ending schedule is very difficult. They play a game, home game against the Giants and then at Cincinnati, and they would have to lose one of those games. And the Patriots obviously would have to win out in order for the Patriots to.
But it sounds to me, though, and then like Neil, you'd still kind of want to root for Baltimore because that may be the only way that you'd get through it, right?
You're absolutely right, and that's where that comment was made, and that is correct. But they'd still be in third place, the Patriots, if Baltimore won.
Right.
That was the thing I want.
Yes, because the first tiebreaker is head to head, and if you hold a sweep over the other two in a three-way tie, that's absolutely correct. That's you're going to get the nod because you've beaten the other two teams that you're in a tie with.
Exactly. So yes, we should still root for Baltimore because their ending two games are much, much harder than
Denver's. Yes,
Denver.
So in that regard, you are correct. You still want to kind of root for Baltimore in that instance, even though, look, you can take care of everything. You basically. If you're a Patriot, you control your own destiny, he tried to say. You control your own destiny to a bye. That's what you control. You win out, you're going to get a bye.
Right.
Now, you still need a little bit of help to get the one seed overall, which means home field advantage and the bye. And Houston's got to lose one more time in their last 3 weeks for that to happen. But at the very least, you can, as long as you take care of your own business, you don't have to worry about anything in terms of, resting that 1 week, which I still think teams would rather do than not do.
Exactly. And the Patriots, as I think I saw on TV the other day, whenever they've made it to the Super Bowl, at least during the Belichick-Brady era, they have always had a bye.
Yep. Yeah, I think that is correct. So, in fact, the last time I can remember them ripping through it, would have been what, 86?
85.
For the 86 Super Bowl, right? So it would have been the 85 season because they had to win three road games in order to get to the Super Bowl to play the Bears.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So it doesn't happen all that often without a bye. It does happen. You can do it. I mean, we've seen it in the NFC. We've seen teams go, they've had the 5 and the 6 seed, or the 4 and the 6, I think, win each of the last. Yeah, the Giants.
Blown right through a couple of times.
Blown right through it a couple of times. But it you know, traditionally, I think you're gonna definitely want to have one less game to play, one less week that you have to survive in order to play in the ultimate game, because the odds are still going to be in your favor.
Right. And the only other thing I guess I would chime in from a Montrealer's viewpoint in terms of number 12 is Yvonne Cournoyer.
Ah, yeah. Well, I figured somebody had to bring in the hockey, right? Somebody had to bring it.
Although I think Brady is better.
Then Yvonne Cournoyer, really?
I've seen them both throughout their careers. They're both great, but I think Brady is.
All right. Well, that's actually a very good choice. And actually, you're the second hockey choice, because Field Yates from ESPN Boston, he said Adam Oates was his favorite 12 growing up.
I'd rather have Cornway than Adam Oates.
Well, okay. You're just showing your
colors.
You're just showing your colors now, Neil.
Yeah,
so that's right.
Yeah.
There'll be a few Boston fans that would kind of like take umbrage at that. But that's understood. It's understood. You're allowed.
Anyway, I enjoy the show, so I'll let you get to somebody else.
Thanks, Neil. Appreciate it. Neil in Canada. We have blown the phones away today. This may be an all-time record. We're in double digits on phone calls today, trying to bang all these things out. This is good. All right, let me get to some emails, because I've had a bunch of them come in here, and I need to try to get to some of them at the very least. Sean in Vancouver said, as you said, that Texans are probably not a Super Bowl team without Schaub. Patriots are definitely not going anywhere without Brady. We finally saw Mallett pass in garbage time. He threw the only interception that turned into the Yates touchdown. That's the only area on the team that the Pats don't have any depth. It's a nitpick. That's true. Brent in Illinois, he was the first one. I got to give Brent the proper credit here. He was the first one that came up with the last Patriot to wear 12 before Tom Brady, in celebration of 12-12-12 today, was Tom Ramsey. And so we'll give Brent in Illinois the credit for that one. Let's see. Marco from Mexico here. He also says Matt Kavanaugh had number 12 before Brady, and that is true. In fact, we had one of our callers say both of those players were the last two before Brady to wear number 12. Brian in Vermont. What a great game. I honestly don't think there's any negatives we can take away other than the drop-off in offense and the fast scoring early on. Granted, that could have been an adjustment that the Texans made, as well as some poor passes from Brady and bad drops by the receivers. Welker continues to have a drop issue lately, and that is a concern going forward, I think. Also want to know your thoughts on the improved defensive play over the past since Tlaib was at it. I hear people saying that the Texans laid an egg, but I think people are also overlooking the fact that the defense came up with some fantastic big plays, fourth down stops, the pick, etc. We did mention earlier, Brian, that we've seen several numbers coming out over the course of the last, especially a couple of days, that QBR is down for the opponent, passing percentage is down, yardage gain is down since Tlaib became a part of the Patriots secondary. Maybe we can get cold hard football facts man Kerry Byrne to elaborate on that one in a little bit. But there's no question that he has made a difference. Maybe if for no other reason than just to elevate the play of others around him, because they know he's being brought in for a reason, and that is to help improve play that has been, well, let's just say, substandard. Kerry, would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely, it has been, and now it's probably above standard, if that's a terminology.
I like that, above standard.
But yeah, listen, they're playing better, and they did not play better all year. I mean, maybe even quite some time. Then they played against the Texans, John. If I'm a Patriots fan, I'm very excited right now.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah.
It's all in an uptick now. Harry in Vegas says, all right, Vegas is Pacific time, so it's 11:30 right now. Of course, this was a couple hours ago. And, yes, the whole 12-12-12 wedding thing is huge today. It was on all of the morning newscasts. Live remotes from the downtown wedding chapels. They were saying the number of bookings was almost double of a regular day. And he says, all right, enough of that. On to football. With the loss of Stallworth and Shanko, the Patriots are once again thin at receiver. Any thoughts on who might be available to come in for the playoff run? Deion Branch, baby. He's back. He was at practice. He was at the walkthrough that they actually had inside the field house today. So Deion Branch is back, and that's the replacement for Stallworth's IR and ankle injury, and Shanko, at least for the time being dismissed from the roster yesterday. There's another one who votes for Jim Kelly of the Buffalo Bills as his favorite 12, because I kept winning money on his team losing Super Bowls. that's probably as good a reason as any. Because I'm not sure too many Patriots fans rooting for the Bills for the Super Bowls in that particular instance. Who's your favorite 12, Kerry, from all time?
Well, you know, I was a Terry Bradshaw guy back in the day, right?
I'm surprised you're the first person to mention him today.
Well, you know, we have something up on Cold Hard Football Facts right now. Number 12s have won, as quarterbacks, have won more Super Bowls than any other number.
Any other number. That's right.
And it's not even close. Yep. And there was this period of like 8 or 9 12s in a row.
That's cool.
In the 1970s. It's obviously the classic quarterback number. So.
It is. It totally is.
And Jerry Seasting, too. Wasn't he 12?
See, and now you're the second person to mention Seasting today. And I'm like, what is the Jerry Seasting fan club going on here?
And I'm a football guy. I'm proud of myself for pulling that one out of my butt, John. You know?
I love it. Another person. Rice is not sure if you guys heard. Brady won his NFL record 23rd Player of the Week award, AFC Offensive Player of the Week, breaking the tie with Peyton Manning. We did. Obviously, we have a tendency to sort of kind of gloss over a lot of the accolades because it doesn't mean a whole lot. But at the same time, yes, and I'm glad you wrote it, and we are mentioning it here because it is a record. 23rd time that he has done that, and he passes Peyton Manning in that particular regard. Let's see. Aren't we completely ignoring the fact that Mallett's throw was exactly on target and that Shanko wasn't able to hold on to it? And considering the aforementioned tight end is no longer on the team, don't you think the coaches view that as a Shanko issue and not a bad throw from Mallett? That's probably legitimate. You know what? And I didn't even realize until yesterday that Shanko was the target on that one because it was garbage time and nobody was really paying attention.
Well, he's also a guy, though, that people haven't paid attention to either.
No,
I think that's
all.
Part of the issue. You know, it's just a numbers game and he's at a position the Patriots are loaded at. It was simple as that.
Right. And, of course, here's a couple of others that have said that the if you watch the video, the pass was not deflected because of Mallett, but it actually off of Shanko's hands, who was then cut. Kevin says, John, I forgot to mention my favorite number 12 is Terry Bradshaw. Well, there's another vote for TB.
All right.
I don't really dig him on Fox, but if you've ever read his book, you would have a greater appreciation for him, and I would second that. Because I think he has meant a lot to a lot of people who, you know, suffer from his particular affliction or afflictions.
And also, John, the best big game quarterback perhaps in history. He averaged over 11 yards per attempt in 4 Super Bowls. He was a gunslinger and he won Super Bowls. He's one of a kind.
Zach sends this on Twitter. John, loved the show. Just wanted to know who you think gets Shanko's roster spot. We got Branch and Logan, but who else? All right, well, there is a roster spot open. Eric Scalavino did mention this earlier today, and my guess is they're going to leave this open, at least for now, because unless somebody can come in and have a potential fit on the game day roster, my guess is they'll leave this spot open for injuries that could happen over the last 3 weeks. And I think that's probably something that's considered a little bit of a luxury at this stage of the game.
It pays to be flexible this time of year, and nobody does it better than the Patriots.
Yep, I would agree with that. All right, so what do you got coming up on the show, Kerry? Anything in particular?
We got a great show, John. I'm very excited about it. You know, there's a great team coming to Foxborough on Sunday.
Really? I hadn't heard.
Yeah, they're called the 49ers.
Oh, okay.
The 49ers, but they have the best young defensive player in the game today, Alden Smith, their outside linebacker. Broke Reggie White's record for sacks in his first 2 years in the NFL. But we have a resident sack expert here at Gillette Stadium, Andre Tippett. He's going to come in studio and talk to us about Alden Smith and you know what it takes to be a sack master from the outside linebacker position and his thoughts in the game. And then we're going to take a look ahead with a guy named Steve DiFilippo of Davio's Northern Italian Steakhouse, a great chef who's going to talk about the taste of the NFL, John, which is a great fundraiser, raises a lot of money for charities, for hunger organizations. The NFL is behind it. Steve is a New England representative. He'll be at the Super Bowl
awesome.
In New Orleans. Whether or not the Patriots are there, Steve will be there. So we're going to talk about sacking the quarterback, and we're going to talk about eating good food during football games.
And taste of the NFL. That's good stuff.
Yep.
All right. Kerry's coming up here momentarily, so stick around. Our thanks to SI's Peter King for joining us in the program today, and obviously for Field Yates from ESPN Boston to stop in, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. Tomorrow here in the playbook, we'll get into more of the San Francisco 49ers and the game matchup, get more of your thoughts. Thank you for the phone participation today. Fantastic. Let's keep it coming. Let's keep that momentum swinging. Let's keep talking the talk. And we'll let the guys down the hallway walk the walk, shall we? Of course, Russell Baxter will be with us inside the Thursday playbook as well. Kerry Byrne, Cold Hard Football Facts, coming up next on Patriots.com Radio.
Dark, but it's rising. I'm pulling on the faith I can see from that black hole on the horizon. I hear your voice calling me. Let it rain, let it rain, let it rain.
Tuesday through Thursday. Hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.